Well, I'm really excited about this exhibition because there's lots of things in this exhibition that have been in store for a really long time. Partly because they're by women artists who were often lesser known, and so we've been able to get them out for, in most cases or many cases, the first time ever, which is really amazing. And what people might think is that we've been purchasing women artists recently, that this is a new thing, but actual fact it isn't, and we purchased our first work by a woman artist in 1871 in the 19th century, and I think actually we're probably in the forefront of collections doing that at this point. It's a work called Elaine by Sophie Anderson, which is just over there. And it was actually bought before the Walker Art Gallery had even been built. In 1871, Liverpool started having an autumn exhibition to rival the Royal Academy. And out of three paintings bought from the first Liverpool exhibition in 1871, Elaine was one of them. And I think this is partly due to Philip Rathbone. Rathbone is a sort of local family. Yeah. And he dominated the committee that was in charge of purchasing works from the Liverpool Autumn Exhibition. But that committee was responsible for buying several women artists. And so at the end of the 19th century, there's a spate of works being collected by women artists by the Walker. And I think actually part of the biggest part of the exhibition is probably the Victorian art part, but I think that shows how the collection was shaped, that early on we had these quite far-reaching or sort of new-thinking people on the committee who were buying.
Sorry, did it pause? Well, I mean, when Rathbone stopped doing it?
It did seem to go down a little bit, and I think that sort of is across many collections, that in the early 20th century women artists, probably they were, particularly as modernism took over, the modernist people, Picasso, and the male sort of British equivalents, that's what art galleries wanted to purchase. They didn't want to purchase women artists. But I think now that there is a backlash going on, and we are still collecting women artists, and it's brilliant. In the contemporary section, we've got three works that have never been on display that we've purchased in the last 10 years. So I'm really excited about having those out.
We haven't seen those yet, we'll have to have a look.
We'll have to go and have a quick look.
And of course, Bridget Riley exhibition in the next room
is next door.
Yeah.
But the exhibition actually starts with needlework, which is the most traditional way that women have been creative. And most women weren't working with a paintbrush, they were working with a needle, and that was sort of expected. And I think people will be really astounded at just how good some of the work is, and most of it has been done by 10-year-old girls who were showing, using samplers to show off the skills that they knew, the different stitches that they knew.
Yeah.
And I think that that's going to be really interesting for people, because I think that's something that sort of gets neglected. And what we've tried to do all the way through is to combine the fine and the decorative art, because it isn't just in paintings that women have been creative, but also in the decorative arts, pottery, needlework. And there's also quite a few sculptures running through the exhibition, which was probably considered the least ladylike of all the arts, because it meant, particularly if you're working with marble, it was dirty work, it was strenuous. But we actually have quite a lot of marble sculptures going through the exhibition, like the Edmonia Lewis, which is over there.
Yeah, I was just looking at that. Yeah,
yeah,
you wouldn't
stunning.
Think a woman had done that.
That's the because, point. I'm really pleased you're saying that, it's amazing what I think, particularly in the 19th century, women were sort of written off as sculptors. Mm. But if you look at that, I mean, it's absolutely stunning. Edmonia Lewis was half African-Caribbean and half Native American, and she actually did get some tutoring in America, but she didn't feel that she was being pushed far enough, and that her subjects, she was sculpting a lot of anti-slavery or post-slavery sort of compositions, but she wanted a bit more freedom, so she actually moved to Rome to study under I've forgotten her name, it's downstairs.
Okay.
I'll turn it that bit out. Let me go and look at the label. There's too many H's. Or have I put it in the main label? Where is she? Oh, Harriet Hosmer. I always get Hermione Wiltshire and Harriet Hosmer mixed up.
Oh,
so Harriet Hosmer, who was actually the first female American sculptor, but she couldn't get any training in America and had to move to Rome. And there she created her own studio and had a sort of sisterhood, which is Edmonia Lewis went to join the sisterhood. So that was women coming together but having to move abroad to get the proper training.
Right.
But in Paris and Rome, and I think in Europe in general, more women who wanted to be painters or sculptors were able to get trained. And I think that's partly because there's a tradition of artistic families having a studio in Europe, and that atelier sort of student pupillage that an artist would come in and he'd take on almost apprentices, students who would learn up how to be an artist. And if you happen to have girl children, you would train them up as you would a boy, because children meant workers, and if they were good, that would bring you in money into your studio.
But women couldn't go to art college.
No, they couldn't. And in Europe, that's how women were trained, which was a very informal way. And so we've got examples from the 16th century where there weren't official training colleges, but several women artists were trained up by their fathers or their relatives in that way, just alongside their brothers. And if they were successful, I mean, a lot of them were incredibly successful, had royal patrons, were celebrities in their own right, had biographies. But in England, that didn't really happen. And I think that's where, in sort of foreign places, then the training, when training did become accessible for women, there was formalised training, they were quicker because they'd already had this system of training up children, in a way, to let women in. But in England, it was a bit more backward because that pupillage system wasn't as strong. It didn't happen in quite the same way. And women took a lot longer to receive formal training. And the Royal Academy didn't let a woman in until 1860. And they only let her in because she put her initials rather than her name right. on the painting that she sent in.
Yeah.
And so they suddenly realised, oh, this is a woman when she turned up.
She was called Bob or something.
And I think that she was called Laura Hereford, but I think that there were still problems after that, because 2 years later, Louisa Starr, who's over there, had to do a very similar devious thing where she put L Starr. And when they found out that she was a woman, they said, oh, well, women aren't allowed. And there's a wonderful quote in the resource area that says, it's by her daughter, and she said, well, her mother said, well, show me in the Constitution where it says women aren't allowed. Yeah. And so the president looked, there was nothing. Right. And so they didn't have a leg to stand on, and they had to let in female pupils, but they let in six so they could chaperone each other. Right. But they still weren't allowed to go to life drawing classes, which was seen as essential for women artists. And that wasn't until about 30 years later. But in actual fact, when the Royal Academy was founded, among several men that founded it, there were two female founding members. And one of them is Angelica Kaufmann, who's in the exhibition. And that was in 1768. But there wasn't another member of the Royal Academy until 1922 that was female. Right. So, I mean, you can see that there were a lot of barriers that women had to go through. Yeah. But I think actually when I've been researching the stories, a lot of them are really steely women and didn't take no for an answer. There's one called Henrietta Ward, who was from an artistic British family, and she was trained up. She was the only child, and I think her parents doted on her. So they trained her up before there was any really formal training in England. And there were lectures going on at the Royal Academy, which women were not encouraged to go to, but apparently she barged into them anyway. And I think that kind of mentality is what got British women proper formal training. But I do think that Paris and Rome were a bit quicker on the uptake.
Yeah, well, yeah, there is this fascinating history that goes along with the exhibition. So as people go around, will they be able to pick up that?
Yes, it's done chronologically, starting with the sort of needlework and then talking about art as a family business. So these early women artists in Europe being trained up alongside their brothers in the family studio. And then we talk about foreign freedom and where it was easier to get more training in abroad. And then making a new path sort of goes through the struggle that women had to get formal training, and then looks at in particular at the Glasgow School of Art, which was set up for men and women, like the Slade School of Art as well, on equal terms at the end of the 19th century. So it just shows the progression of formal training for women in British art. And then we look at Pre-Raphaelite women, because that was another way that women who didn't want to go to the Royal Academy were able to be trained. Often the Pre-Raphaelites is very male, well, it was seven male that set it up in 1848, but they were actually quite supportive to friends or relatives who happened to be women artists. I mean, Lizzie Siddle is the classic example, and although we don't have any of her work, we've got work by Emma Sands, who was Frederick Sands' sister, and Maria Stillman, who was a pupil of Ford Madox Brown. And Ford Madox Brown taught his two daughters alongside his son in the studio and was very much for women artists. And then the Pre-Raphaelite style goes on into the 20th century, and we have a brilliant example of Elizabeth Fortescue Brickdale, where that minute attention to detail, that even though the style, the actual brotherhood sort of broke up in the mid-1850s, the style went on into the 20th century and was really appealing for male and female artists. But that was another route that Pre-Raphaelite artists were taking women on as pupils and teaching them, so they didn't necessarily have to go into the Royal Academy when there were problems and it was still very male dominated. And then it sort of follows it through to the early 20th century with really interesting people like Laura Knight, who became a dame, and she was an official war artist, but I also discovered in my research that she was one of the official artists at the Nuremberg war crimes trials, which I think is really interesting that a woman would have been sent to something was quite grueling, and that sort of challenged my preconception of what society was expecting of women at that point. Yeah. I think that was really interesting.
Is there a Gwen John painting in there?
There isn't. Yeah, because it's taken from our holdings.
Yeah,
we have no Gwen John.
Right.
But we do have some just brilliant artists that people probably will recognise the names, but not have realised that we've got them in the collection.
Yeah.
And then it looks at the post-war boom and the rise of the John Moores competition, which we've got a painting that was included in the first John Moores exhibition in 1957. And John Moores is anonymous, and so for women artists, this sort of equaled it.
Yes.
So that's really lovely to show that the Walker actually, not only through its buying, but also through the competitions it held, was supporting women artists. And then there's a section on feminism with Helen Chadwick, who's one of sort of very well-known feminist artist who very early on was using her body in her work, often her naked body, but later on was still very keen to use her body, but not so overtly. And it's a photo montage of cells taken from her body and looked at under a microscope with landscapes and sea, what she called sea paintings, where she had put oil paint on the sea and then caught it on a blank canvas. And so it's this fusion of all these images together. It's called Viral Landscapes. And then we go on into the contemporary art, where we've got our new acquisitions by Judith Cowan, Paul Arago and Louise Bourgeois on display for the first time, which is really exciting.
So
it is really good and I'm really pleased. But we've also sort of combined the decorative arts. We've got Emma Rogers, who's a local artist. And we've got an AV or an installation where you can see her actually working in her studio and discussing her work as an artist. And then we've got her work, which is Monkey, Mother and Child.
Yes.
So it's really nice to be supporting local Liverpool artists. Mm-hmm. And we've got a work by Rabindra Singh from the Singh Twins.
Oh, yes.
And usually just a work by one of them, actually. But it's a wonderful, it's Come On All Ye Reds. Which is about Liverpool football, but it's also got the Anglican Cathedral and the Metropolitan Cathedral, and it really invites you to get up close and look at the tiny details. So it's really nice to be celebrating Liverpool women artists who are alive at the moment, so we're really pleased. It's been such a pleasure to work on this.
It's about women artists, but it's also an excellent show, obviously.
Yeah, and it's just great to get things out on show that perhaps haven't been on display, particularly the watercolours. Almost half of the sort of fine art is works on paper, which we're not able to have on display because they're so susceptible to fading. But actually we have got them out on display, and lots of them have been in store and never seen before, so that's really wonderful to have them out.
Yeah, and there's a lot of the decorative art as well in the
there
cabinets
is,
and so
yes.
on. There's a lot to see, yes.
Yeah.
We'll go and have a look around.
Brilliant, I hope you enjoy it.
Thanks for downloading from DefNet Media.